For 4/4/2012, OMG, Pop, it's another episode of Video Games Hot Dog. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And we're back again with another another episode of Video Games Hot Dog. You guys have to remind me during the second break that I left a beer in the freezer.
Okay.
Listeners,
I'm so
you need
bad
to remind me
at remembering this kind of stuff.
Don't forget that during the second break, you left a beer in the freezer.
How you guys been?
Been all right.
We're back in our studio.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right?
It's pretty good.
Back in our pillow fort.
We had
it's
some real
much
margaritas.
Much less lonely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you were pretty lonely here. My cat was lonely, too.
Oh.
Did you miss me as much as my cat did?
I don't know.
Probably not. Even though you are missing me is probably more meaningful than my cat missing me, I doubt if you experience it as strongly
as she
does.
I did leave you that dead bird in your shoe.
Oh, neat.
Did you also take a bunch of toilet paper and run it around the house?
Well, yeah, but I put it back afterwards.
Okay.
You're playing that TRS-80 game, Outhouse.
Yes.
What have you guys been up to?
A lot of Minecrafting.
Yeah.
Played some other games that we'll get to later.
Just building things in Minecraft.
Yeah, built in the texture pack I use. The priest villagers in my NPC village all have creeper faces on their backs.
Oh Jesus!
So I built them I'm in the process of building them a temple to the silent ones.
Oh my God.
I feel like in vanilla Minecraft, without a texture pack installed, all the villagers just sort of look like thugs.
Yeah, I don't like the way they look. And going back, I try and keep my texture pack. I try to keep the textures looking like just like nicer versions of the default textures, so that stuff doesn't look weird when other people come look at my stuff. And just switching back and forth between them, the default textures look so much blander.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the point, right, of putting a skin on something is that it can,
yeah,
it can look
you're
as cool as
you're supposed
to
fill in the gaps
to
with your imagination, you asshole.
Yeah, I honestly just don't have a lot of interest in texture packs.
I should post some comparative.
Oh, I'm sure
they're
awesome.
Yeah, but
I'm
mean,
sure
you could also
awesome
post some screenshots from Uncharted 3 and say, you should use this texture pack.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just not the game anymore.
The water is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
They look much nicer. They're better color saturation and
get a higher resolution.
No, I use normal resolution.
Like, what are those? They're probably like 32x32. Is that, or are they 16x16?
I think I want to say they're 16x16.
Okay.
Higher res packs do exist, but mine's a normal.
Yeah. Oh. What have you been up to, Kevin? I was with you like the whole time. What have you done since we got back into Phoenix?
I read a book. I watched some movies. Yeah, eaten some pizza.
You read Sense of an Ending.
I did.
Which is going to be the first book in the Idle Thumbs Book Club podcast.
Yeah.
Which they're trying to come up with a name for. You gave them some terrible.
I gave them one good suggestion and a bunch of really bad ideas.
They said that they, yeah.
I gave them one not terrible suggestion and a bunch of terrible ones. So.
Right. Thumbs up your book.
Yeah.
Sitting around with my thumb up my book.
Yeah.
Is what you suggested.
Thumbing through the pages.
Mm-hmm.
No, the good suggestion I gave them, which I can't imagine that they're going to use in the end, was fine print.
I don't think that's a real thing.
What do you mean?
That's a terrible idea, too.
Why?
You only think it's good because you don't know what good is.
You don't think fine print is a good name for a book club podcast?
It has to have the word thumb in it or it's not okay.
He specifically said no thumbs.
Yes, he did. No, no, he did not.
How are you going to turn the pages with no thumbs?
You use your tongue.
Yeah.
You're reading everything on a Kindle.
Automatic page turning. But I read the book digitally on my phone, and I think I'm getting to the point where I actually prefer books on my phone to physical books. Because it's just like, I was like, oh, a bunch of times after I read that, I was like, oh, I should read some more. Oh, yeah, I don't have a book with me because I'm driving.
anyway, I cleaned a lot after I got home.
Okay.
I apparently left my house a real mess when we left for San Francisco. Been going back to taking a lot of showers.
Yeah.
That's pretty fun.
Hasn't been doing anything good for your health.
No, not at all. Yeah, I'm getting sick. This sucks. Having a hard time talking because my nose and throat are closed up in a weird way.
We've got an important meeting tomorrow, maybe. So you got to be
healthy. Yeah, I'll be fine. Yeah, but other than that, I've been playing video games. You guys been playing video games?
Oh, yeah.
What video games have you been playing?
I've been playing a surprising number of video games. I've been playing...
As I understand it, that number is like three.
No,
is that a surprising number?
No, okay. Not counting Minecraft and not counting the two big things that I'll get to in a second.
Minecraft and World of Warcraft.
I haven't played any WoW in a long time, actually. But I did play... maybe a half a dozen or eight different iPad games, but I figured I would save that list until probably next week when I don't have anything more interesting to talk about.
Okay.
But the two big games I played this week were Journey and Esra's Wrath.
Okay.
Which, I don't know, which one do you want to start
with? Tell us about Journey.
Journey. It's a journey. There's a desert. It's very beautiful. You walk around in it.
Okay.
Is it all in a desert?
Later stages, it's further up the mountain that you're trying to get to, so it's snow instead.
Okay.
But it's all that sort of powdery environment. And there's ruins to explore. You're underground for a section of it. And there's a little bit of platforming, but it's not difficult platforming. It doesn't really get in the way of...
Don't you end up using, scarf points to get to fly or something?
Yeah, you get the ability to basically to jump, and your jump gets, you can hold the button down longer and get more jump the more of the glowy collectibles that you find in the map.
Yeah. Does it consume scarf to jump?
The more of these collectibles that you find, the longer your scarf becomes, and there are glowing runes that appear on your scarf to indicate how much charge you have left. So using your jump ability burns off the runes, but your scarf stays the same length.
And so then, you get the same capacity.
Yeah, and coming into contact with something made of cloth recharges your scarf. Hmm. And so,
does it like absorb glyphs from the cloth thing and put them on your scarf, or can you do it?
No, you can do it.
You can do it
much,
over and over again.
Yeah, and if you've run into another player in the game, the two of you can collide to recharge both of you.
So could you then, in tandem with another player, jump arbitrarily high?
I have not tried it. Apparently, there are some tricks like that you can do. I don't know what sort of restrictions. You would have to coordinate it really well to stay in contact with the other player.
Is there any latency in like seeing other dudes running around, or?
Not that I noticed. I never saw anybody like just appear out of nowhere in front of me. So it seems to be careful to put them off the camera slightly, and then they run into your view or whatever.
I mean, I guess with only two people, it doesn't really matter if you're seeing the same thing that they're seeing, right? As long as it's like sort of working out the experience for each of you.
Yeah.
It's not like you're fighting or doing.
Yeah, the interaction between the two of you is incredibly minimal. You have a button that you can push to like chirp, and the other player will see that. And that's about it.
Can't you bow to them or something?
The pause button causes you to like sit on the ground.
Huh.
So, and they can see that.
They talked about the people who made Journey gave a small talk at the experimental gameplay session at GDC, and they talked about how they prototyped a ton of the stuff. They prototyped a bunch of stuff in 2D, and then when they transitioned to like a 3D engine to start like actually building the game, almost none of that worked because it just the differences between 2D and 3D prototyping are so vast that a lot of the stuff, like they sort of got some of the conceptual stuff across, but almost none of the actual mechanics translated well. Which was kind of an interesting revelation that they were.
I mean, I wonder if that means that they could take that prototype and make it into a good 2D game.
I don't know. I mean, it wasn't like it was extremely fundamental prototyping. You know, like dots moving around on a background.
That prototyping.
Sure. But it was just like vague sort of mechanical stuff that.
You know what would be funny is if the game prototype. If all of the enemies were just like gray rectangles,
yeah,
that would be pretty sweet.
There's an iPhone game called Fastar, which is just a dude that hits a bunch of boxes with a sword.
Yeah, I saw that a couple days ago when I spent 6 hours updating my phone to iOS 5, and in the process, it automatically helpfully reinstalled every app that I've ever deleted. And every free app that my girlfriend had downloaded since she started using my old computer.
That's super weird.
So yeah, I deleted Fastar from the 5 pages of extra shit that I didn't want on my phone anymore, but that iTunes helpfully replaced.
Huh.
That was great. But now, I deleted iTunes today. Guys, I fucking went into the control panel in Windows 7, and I said, uninstall iTunes. And then I watched the percentage bar go across, and when it got to the end, I went, because I am free from that motherfucking tyranny.
It's not really tyranny.
It is tyranny. It is the tyranny of a madman, and I am free of it.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Hey, fine. You can shit on my happiness all you want, buddy.
That's my job.
I know. Yeah, so Journey's cool.
It's really beautiful. I found it to be a joy to explore, even though a lot of the people I encountered did not seem as interested with exploring, and so I got a lot of people chirping at me and trying to to get me to follow the main path of the game instead of poking around.
Talk a little bit
corners.
More about the single versus multiplayer aspect of the game.
I have not actually played it single player.
Well, but you effectively did, right?
Effectively, because I just ignored the other people for the most part.
But I mean, it brings people in. It brings the game.
As you play, it will locate somebody else on the network who is in the same area that you are
geographically
in
the world.
Yeah, okay. And you will see them, and they can chirp at you, and you'll see them running around, and you can follow them or whatever.
And you can like high five them.
Nope.
That sucks.
You can go boop.
Can you high scarf?
You can't do like a fist bump after you shoot some dudes.
Can you use
there's
scarf?
No dude shooting.
Can you use the scarf as a garrote?
Wait, I thought it was a video game.
It is a video game with no dude shooting.
Huh.
Yeah.
What about dudettes?
Crazy. This was by the guys. This was like Flow Flower Journey, right?
Yeah.
I would have hoped that it had been Flow Flower Flowerly. and then something that has two more letters.
Flowerliness.
Oh, that's four
Wait,
more
was
letters.
It really flower or was it flower?
Oh, it could have been flower. Oh,
did yeah. we do we know?
Flow, flower, flowest. So there this one is just flowest. Yeah. Cool.
What about Azure?
No, and then do you know who the people are that you're playing with?
Right. Not at the time, but after you finish the game, it will give you a list of the PlayStation Network account names of all the people that you encountered. And after beating the game, the first name on my list was Spick Nasty MF.
That's great.
Yeah. I was, oh.
So you had a really beautiful experience.
Yeah. It was nice to share that little moment with you, Spick Nasty MF.
How can that guy still have an account?
How often do you interact with somebody's actual player name?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it just seems like any policy that existed would prevent that from.
Well, do you think it is some nearby Latino who really likes his mom?
I mean, even then, it's not even then, it's not okay, right? You're not allowed to take it back if you're being anonymous.
Huh.
I don't think you are. I mean, it just seems like they would not. It seems like Sony, because they're Sony, would want people not to use any racial slurs at all.
Sure.
Well, but I mean, I guess Xbox had that blowback from saying like, well, no names that imply that you're gay. But then gay dudes were like, hey, F you, buddy. And then they reneged on that.
Maybe it's just short for spicy. He just couldn't get all the characters to fit.
Okay. So it's spice nasty and MF.
Mother flowers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Magnolia flowers.
Yeah.
Spice nasty magnolia flowers.
Yes.
I mean, nasty. Nasty is a pretty negative word.
Mother flowest.
I wouldn't allow that. Well, cool. It's worth playing, though.
I enjoyed it.
I should play it on your PS3. I don't... whenever I find out that there's a game on a console that I really want to play, I think... because that means I got to go downstairs, turn on my console, have it not work for whatever fucked up reason. Like, what did I play last? I played that sword game.
I don't even know what you've played.
No, I played
recently.
What was it called? It was that sword game where you went to different places and there were four kinds of enemies with different palette shifts and you power up your sword.
Is that the one where everyone's Norwegian?
No, that is Skyrim.
Oh.
I think you're thinking of. Or the one where they're all talking in that fake Swedish. That is, what was that game on Steam? Mystica?
Oh, okay.
It's not Mystica. What is that even called?
Magica.
Yeah. And then they released the expansion that takes place during the Vietnam War.
They did?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, it seems like a cool thing. I didn't play it. It was really confusing. It was like the basic elements of play were like combining runes in sequence, but it was kind of cumbersome. Like, yeah, I don't know. I had a hard time. The first time I tried to kill a boss, I killed the boss and all of the friendly people that were around the boss, and then they yelled at me for killing all their guards.
That was Magica?
Yeah.
Huh.
But yeah, man, like, I am guessing that if I wanted to go to my house and purchase and play Journey, I'm guessing that even if I wasn't, like, dragging my feet, it would probably be an hour of solid, concerted effort for me to acquire and start playing that game.
Okay, how long would it take you to go to a store and buy a game and come home?
Less than an hour.
What if the store is half an hour away?
Okay, but that's not the question, right? The question is, if I had a disc, how long would it take me? It's probably similarly long.
Okay.
No, man, if I went and bought a PS3 game and my PS3 has probably not been turned on for 6 months. So it is a good half an hour of progress bars.
I've watched movies on it within the past 3 months.
The screen before I can even play a game on a disc that I already own. And I'm guessing that the fucking batteries in the controllers are probably dead. So I would have to play using the 6-inch cord that came with the PS3.
It's USB, so you could plug it into your computer in advance and charge it up before
you need it. Or you could use a portable USB battery.
Uh-huh.
There's just so many possibilities.
Yeah, there are. There are a lot of possibilities. One possibility is I'll go play a game on my fucking computer, which is just already turned on and
so,
works.
Okay. If you didn't turn your computer on for 6 months and you were like, I want to play the game on my computer, and you turned it on, especially if it's a freaking Windows machine, it would be like, you have 8,000 updates to install.
That's all opt-in.
No, not really.
Yeah, it is. So I would probably have to update Steam, right? Like Steam, the platform probably updates more often than once every 6 months. Yeah, you know, you're right.
But that's the thing. It's like,
of a console is supposed to be ease of use, right? The advantage of a console is that you're not supposed to have to deal with all the shit that you have to deal with if you want a game on a PC.
I don't know that that's necessarily
that
true.
That used to be true. It is sad that it seems to no longer be true.
It is. The advantage of a console is potentially, from the developer point of view,
they're only running on one set of hardware.
You know exactly what hardware you're on.
Sure, that's cool. Cool for them. Cool. Cool job, developers. Sweet. Sweet advantage, bro. I'll keep that in mind next time I... Like, it is literally at the point where if I want to play a video game, I have to think about it like a day ahead of time. Get the shit ready for me to play a video game. Because by the time I decide I want to play the new Batman game and I go down and I put the disc in and then it is going to be 20 minutes. Like, I keep exaggerating and saying an hour, but probably... When I put in the Batman game, I think it took 20 minutes for all the progress bars to go across the screen before I was punching a dude as Batman.
Right.
Right. I would walk off in that 20-minute period and have to come back and play Batman the next day. Because, fuck this, 20 minutes is enough time that I could go do something else. So I do, and I'm just not going to play Batman. You know, they already got my money, so what do they care? I'm just going to start pirating games.
Spend that 20 minutes reading the comic book that came with the
Batman. Yeah.
The fact that I am too
sensitive...
And then you just
blow up your TV.
The fact that I'm too sensitive to this doesn't mean it's not bullshit. I want you to keep that in mind.
It's just such a bizarre complaint
in
my mind.
You've seen it happen.
I'm not saying that it doesn't happen. It's just like... That's what the world we live in is made up of progress bars at this point.
They
like,
need to bring back... The mini games that some games used to give you.
No, somebody has that patented.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they can't.
Oh, dickbag.
Somebody owns that, and you can't do it in any other game without paying for that patent.
I don't believe.
No, it's a real thing.
It's a real thing. It's too close to April 1st to believe you.
Man,
you say?
I am so over the April Fool's joke.
What does that mean to play a minigame while there's a progress bar?
A minigame during a loading screen is patented. Somebody gave that patent to somebody, and I was like in the PS1 generation, I think, when they started having loading screens on games.
But I mean, that's something that people do all the time, and I can't imagine that those people are paying for that.
That was something that people did for a little while until somebody patented it, and then nobody has done it since.
I don't think that's true. I think that there are plenty of games that have stuff going on.
I haven't seen one on a console in years.
Oh, yeah. Maybe not in a console game, I guess, but it's something that people do all the time in like Flash games.
Oh, well, sure, because they're not going to go after them. There's no money in that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the truth. I'm not just making this up. Why are you so... You're so angry. You're so...
It just seems ridiculous.
You're so antagonistic.
It seems ridiculous that that should be a thing.
Man, is all of the years and years of me being mean to you, suddenly am I sowing what I wrapped? What I reaped?
Did you do it rhyming?
What I reaved? Oh, man. Did you play the Apollo 18 plus 20? Did you play Which Describes How You're Feeling All the Time?
No.
Oh, so good. Such a good game.
Oh, I have to play that one then.
Yeah, I'll tell you. We'll talk about it when we get to the assignment section. But Asura's Wrath.
Asura's Wrath.
Tell me about that.
Asura's Wrath is... I really enjoy it. I think it's friggin' hilarious. I can't recommend it to anyone who is not already into anime involving explosions and fighting. Because it is not so much a game as it is a sci-fi magical explosion fighting anime, which has occasional quick time events, and once in a while it breaks it up with a short... God of War style combat
sequence. Where you actually like are moving a dude around with a stick and hitting
and
a sword button.
Hitting dudes and comboing your attacks.
Huh, okay.
They're very short sequences. They last just long enough for you to build up your rage meter to allow you to hit the burst button, which causes the next cutscene to start.
Huh.
But it really, like, it completely embraces the anime ness of it. The game is broken up into episodes. The beginning of each episode, the episodes are between 5 and 15 minutes long, I guess. Every episode begins with
a recap on the last episode.
It gives you the title. It gives you a few credits, like it says, you know, a creative director, art director. Credits.
Do they differ from episode to episode?
No, they're the same every time, so far as I've noticed. Midway through the episode, it...
Takes a commercial break?
Yes. It cuts to like a title bumper, fades to black, comes back up on another title bumper.
Stuff has happened in between.
Sometimes when you come back, it recaps the last minute of dialogue, just like it would in a TV show coming back from the commercial break. At the end of each episode, there is a preview of what will happen in the next episode.
That sounds great.
It's hilarious. I love it.
And this
it's,
is like
it's
an on
barely
disc
a game, but
full
it's hilarious.
Price game, right? Like this was.
I think so. Yeah, I got it a little cheaper because I bought it off Amazon Prime. But
cool.
Yep. But yeah, if you're into that sort of thing,
have you beaten it?
No. I played it with Jenny watching. We played through, I guess, season one.
How many seasons are there in a
game? I'm not sure. I think there's something like 15 or 16 episodes. We played to the end of episode 5, at which point there is an entire credit sequence at the end of it.
Wow. I mean, I admire a person that really follows
sticks
through on a
guns
joke like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that's a good commitment.
But yeah, I mean... If you're down with an anime in which a very angry dude with six arms blows up an enemy who is the size of the Earth, then it's fun.
Cool. What about you, Kevin? You been playing any video games?
Not anything particularly new. I've continued to play Draw Something, though not quite as addictively, probably like once a day as opposed to every time somebody draws something for me.
Zynga.
Zynga.
Stop giving them eyeballs.
And then...
Oh, I'm sorry. Stop giving them a bowl of peeled grapes.
I finished all the move the box puzzles, so I could put that away again. So I'm desperately afraid that they're going to release yet another level pack.
So you're scared.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of being excited about getting more video game to play, you are scared that there are going to be more levels.
There's other games that I want to play, and I don't want to have to sit there and solve all their puzzles to be able to...
Just delete it.
No.
Delete it.
No.
Delete it. If you are scared that more levels are going to come out.
It would remove his scores from Game Center.
It's in my completed folder. It's in one of my completed games folders. And then I played a bunch of Minecraft. I built a blaze crushing machine.
Yep.
I built my first alchemy station and played around with the alchemy thing for a little while.
Was it any fun?
So I just spoiled myself about the recipes and stuff right away.
Yeah, I don't. You couldn't.
You kind of have to, yeah. I think. Yeah.
It kind of takes all the fun out of it because I feel like it was specifically designed to be something that you're supposed to figure out. Because it just doesn't seem like it's any fun.
I mean, there are certain things that, this is probably an alchemy ingredient. What happens if I use it? But there are others. There are important potions that I feel like you would just never guess. You would never guess to combine a slice of melon and a golden nugget.
Sure.
You would never guess to combine spider eye, mushroom, sugar.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Sure, but those are almost all for the negative potions anyway.
Yeah, but the idea that it is designed for experimentation to be the way that you're supposed to approach it, I think loses some credibility when you actually look at the things that you have to do.
Yeah, I don't know.
To do it. I mean, you know, I guess, like, alchemy relies, even being able to do alchemy relies on you having stuff from the nether. So, like, you're at a particular point at that point where you've got some stuff.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess you would try those.
I don't know. I feel like you
would probably never figure out how to build a nether gate without spoiling yourself to begin with.
Yeah.
Do you ever encounter one out in the world?
I don't. Not to my knowledge.
Yeah. Huh. No, I think he's right, though. I mean, even if you did put stuff together in that configuration, you would never think, oh, I should
light it on fire.
I should use this thing that I probably also never figured out how to make to randomly try to set the air on fire.
Well, okay, so there are achievements for getting into the nether, right? So the achievement system tells you how to, it tells you of the existence of alchemy, it tells you of the existence of nether and nether gates and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So
I don't think it tells you enough about nether gates.
I'm curious.
I haven't looked at those achievements in a while.
Sometimes I wish that I could just do that Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind thing and approach a game, you know, like
totally
say
novel.
The games that we work on, right?
Right.
That would be an extremely valuable thing to be able to do, or to just like make a clone of myself that's identical to me, except it has never played Minecraft, and then just watch him play Minecraft. Really, watch him play Minecraft for 3 minutes and then go to the Minecraft wiki. Maybe a clone that also doesn't know what the internet is.
Right.
But then he's like, why isn't Minecraft working? What does this mean, connecting to server? What's a server?
Right.
What does
Who
connect
are you?
Mean?
Where am I?
Yeah. Why do you look so much like me? Why is my dick so big?
There are I imagine the alchemy system will become more robust as future updates happen because there are already maybe as many potion effects that exist in the code that you just can't make at the moment.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Maybe not that many, but there's a bunch.
The only one that I've really used is the speed potion.
Yeah, that was the one that I was interested in.
Speed potion is nice.
The healing potions seem cool, but I don't think I'm going to keep one on my action bar for emergencies because I would never think to use it. Mm.
The regeneration potions are very good, but the gas tiers are a pain in the ass to get.
Yeah.
I've apparently got a pretty good area to farm gas tiers over by where I am because there's a big open area with a big floor.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So. And constantly ghasts shooting fireballs at me, blowing shit up. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I don't know, man. I've gotten kind of into it. Man, I had to go through these fucking calisthenics to get Minecraft working on my desktop. It had just gotten shittier and shittier and just to the point where it's like I would run it and, you know, walk around for maybe 30 seconds, and then it would just go to, like, 2 or 3 frames per second, and then eventually lock up and crash.
Did you need to just upgrade
every
your
single time.
JGQLF?
JWR-etch?
Yeah.
JWR-etch. They used a thing that's not even a letter. That's why it's so hard to, like, how do you go to that URL? You have to find
copy
somebody else to cut
copy
and paste
it
from.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a secret. So... I noticed that thing that was like, hey, if you want to use far render distance, you should use a 64-bit Java installation. So I like go to java.com and try to figure out how to get a fucking 64-bit Java. And I like check to make sure, I don't know what that means. What is do I have 64 bits? Do I have 64 bits on my DOS? And I looked in, I clicked on my computer and I was like, computer, show details. And it said 64-bit operating system. And I was like, yay. So I went to java.com. Because that's what, if you want something, you go to thatthing.com.
And it gave you a cup of coffee?
No, it was like, here, download this. And I'm like, nope, this is what I already got. I don't know what the fuck. How do you get the 64-bit Java virtual machine? There's just no way. Like, looked, and I was like, all right, I don't see any way to do this. Apparently, what you have to do is you have to run the 64-bit. I found instructions in the Minecraft forums on how to install 64-bit Java and run Minecraft on it. And you have to track down in your start menu the 64-bit version of Internet Explorer, which is not the default one. Ugh. It's a different version of Internet Explorer. You run that and go to java.com, and then java.com is like, oh, hey, you got 64 bits up in that piece. Have this. And it gives you a download link to install that. And then you have to
also a car. Just
you have to write the command line. You have to make a new shortcut and write the entire command line string to run the 64-bit Java VM with the arguments telling it like how much memory to use and stuff, point it at the Minecraft executable, and then that's how you've got a shortcut to run Minecraft in 64-bit Java. It is such a fucking, like,
that's crazy.
It wasn't that hard. It was just like,
super,
if somebody hadn't, I guess this is true of everything, right? But if somebody hadn't already done this and been able to concisely tell me how to do it, I never would have figured out.
Yeah.
You know, Minecraft is just like, hey, you should do this. And it turns out this is like, you should build a rocket and fly to Jupiter. And then Minecraft will run really well in Jupiter's gravitational field. Like, oh, cool. Okay.
It's like
I guess.
Super cool computer system because it'd be really cold out there, too.
Oh, yeah. We do is push the Jupiter button and get right there in a big hurry. You know where Minecraft runs really well? The center of Jupiter.
Nice.
But yeah, I got Minecraft running. And suddenly, if I hit max frame rate, Minecraft was running on my desktop at 500 frames per second.
Whoa.
You hit F3, and that thing is like shooting across the screen. The little progress meter is shooting across the screen like faster than you can see it. It's just like this tiny, it's like a tiny field of red grass at the very bottom of that rectangle. I was like, let's turn that down a little bit. Let's do balanced performance, which is only like 150 frames per second. I'm like, I'll take it. The lower my frame rate, the less noise my video card makes. So, yeah, there's something wrong with that computer.
You have terrible luck with machines.
Boy, I do.
Just in general.
You're telling me, brother. You know what works really well? My car.
Yeah?
I've really not had any problems with my car. My phone, more or less,
your
okay.
Your car's tires decided to stop working.
They do get a
lot
of flat tires, yeah. Hmm. But since I got my own air conditioner, since I got my own air compressor like a grown-up, that's what I told the guy at the car dealership. I was like, you know what? I decided I was so tired of getting these flat tires that I just went and bought an air compressor. I'm not going to, because I would never go to a gas station and air up my tires like once a month. But if I had an air compressor in my garage, I would do it. And I told the guy at the dealership, I'm like, yeah, it makes me really feel like a grown up. And he kind of laughed. And I guess he's not accustomed to looking at guys who are like noticeably graying saying, hey, I finally feel like a grown up.
I'm a man child.
Yeah, I guess.
But now I have a new toy, which makes me feel like a man.
Yeah, that air compressor. I taught you how to use the air compressor.
That's true. It is kind of terrifying.
It seems like the day is coming fairly soon where, Kevin, you want me to teach you how to shave.
Yep.
This seems to be a thing that is happening in our lives. Kevin has always used an electric razor for his entire life, and his girlfriend wants him to start shaving like a man. So he's going to start using a blade.
The electric razor just doesn't shave very close.
My dad didn't use an electric razor, and so I just always thought of it. He was like, yeah, I tried, and it sucked. So I just...
My dad did, and that's he taught me how to shave with an electric razor, and that was it. And so I've just never used a
straight
razor.
When I get around to shaving, I just use a beard trimmer. Microphone hasn't complained about stubbliness.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Do you ever shave down to bare skin?
You always have a beard. I mean...
I always have the chin beard. The sides tend to grow because I forget to shave for weeks at a time.
I don't know how you kiss, Riff, and I don't really want to know. But I feel like
the usual way.
It's not like the side of your cheek that she's complaining about when she complains about the stubbliness, right? So like if you have a
you know,
that's not the part that's important.
I use conditioner in my beard.
Ooh.
So maybe that helps.
I don't even use conditioner in my hair.
Huh.
It's great.
Oh, so when you said you had a hair conditioner.
Yeah, I feel like a grown-up because I've started using hair conditioner.
I see. So you meant hair compressor.
Yes. Oh, God. That's what... We installed this. It's like the carbon footprint of the barbershop went way down when we got that hair compressor. It's like... It's weeks. You can go weeks before you have to throw it away. And, man, you can soak up a lot of oil.
Yeah.
If you dump... You drop this capsule of compressed hair
into
the
Exxon
ocean,
Valdez.
And it just fills the entire ocean up with barber hair. That'd be great. Oh, boy. Minecraft. Wow. I played a bunch of Minecraft, too, I guess. I didn't really do anything interesting. I'm trying to do everything myself. I don't want to, like, take stuff from other people.
Yeah, I've been wondering if you want... Like, I'm getting this overabundance of, like, efficiency 4 diamond picks, and I was wondering if you wanted any of them.
No.
Because they will make mining obsidian, like, a thing that you will be able to do and not feel bad about.
Yeah, but I don't need that much obsidian.
Well, but if you ever want any obsidian.
Yeah.
But you don't want
it. I'm doing it myself. I can do it myself.
Okay.
I'll do it. I'll do it on my own. I got to go kill a blaze because I can't do any alchemy until I get one blaze rod.
Yeah.
And I fucked around in that fortress for a really long time and none of them spawned. So, I don't know. I think I need to make it dark.
You mean probably need to make it darker.
Yeah. Anyway. What else? I've been playing a bunch of Mass Effect 3.
Okay.
How is that?
Well... So, I've talked about this before, but I was extremely confused by Mass Effect 1.
Right.
Like, I sort of never had any idea what was going on. And in Mass Effect 2, they ratcheted all the systems back to the point where I wished that there was more going on with the RPG systems, but at least I kind of understood what was happening. And they've ratcheted it back up. And I feel like with Mass Effect 3, they are relying on you having some vocabulary from Mass Effect 1 to understand what the fuck is ever going on, ever.
Okay.
And I kind of don't.
Can you explain what it isn't that you don't understand? I know that's a tough call.
There are a number of things that I really like about this game, and there are a number of things that really frustrate me about this game. So, like, this is a game in which I actually enjoy going and talking to dudes and going through and thoroughly exploring dialogue trees because it's fucking interesting. Like, they have done a really good job of building this really sort of compelling universe.
That was what I really enjoyed about the second one, which is the only one that I've played. I didn't play the first one and I haven't bought the third one, but I really didn't enjoy so much all the shooting gallery in the second one, and I've heard that it's even more so in the third one, so I haven't bothered.
If it was like a shooting gallery, that would be... I feel like it is like a shooting gallery if you have any sense of what a 3D space is arranged like.
Okay.
But to me, it's like a shooting gallery where half of the targets are behind you for some fucked up reason because you're not where the game thinks you're supposed to be at the time. Playing it on a PC, I played Mass Effect 3 at Comic-Con, right? They were demoing it at Comic-Con, and I was just like, wow, am I having a hard time moving around this fucking room. And I attributed it to playing it on a console,
right?
Because I didn't play Mass Effect 2. I played Mass Effect 2 on the PC. Really, the furthest I got into Mass Effect 1 was when I played it on a PC, too. So it was like... But, so, to run, you hold down the space bar. To go into cover, you hit the space bar. To move from cover to cover, you hit the space bar. To somersault out of cover into the open, you hit the space bar. To climb over cover, you hit the space bar. And so I never know what the fuck my guy is going
to
do when I hit the space bar.
You hit the space bar. To jump, you hit the space bar.
No, seriously, you're not exaggerating?
No, like, I'm not. Some of those things happen with a modifier.
Oh, okay.
But
so it's like shift space
forward and hitting space makes you jump over the cover that you're in if you're in cover, and it's something you can jump over. Sometimes I'll get into cover behind something that's not meant to be used as cover, and I can't shoot. Sometimes I'll get into cover, and I will have a guy that I can see, but then when I pop out of cover, the camera moves enough that I can no longer see the guy, and so I can't shoot him because I'm shooting a wall that he's kind of hiding behind. Sometimes, most of the time, I have no fucking idea which direction I'm facing because every time my guy randomly fucking somersaults out of cover instead of moving from one cover to another or whatever. Here is my typical experience of playing. Got a bunch of dudes shooting me. Some of them I can see, but not when I pop out of cover, so I apparently need to move to some other cover. All right, there's some other cover over there. And then I somersault in the opposite direction, am immediately out in the open, get shot, almost die, randomly run in some direction that I don't know what it is anymore because that somersault also swung the camera around. So I no longer have any sense of where I am in this space. Like, I recognize that this is a problem with me and not a problem with the game.
Okay.
I am so bad at games like this that it's... Here's what I'm afraid.
Yeah.
I'm afraid that the thing that I need to be doing is playing the game in story mode.
Is that where there's no combat?
There's shooter mode where all of the conversations are just cutscenes, and okay. then there's RPG mode, which is the everything, and then there's story mode where it says you will never encounter a challenging fight.
And, wow, they might as well just say lack of balls.
Yeah,
mode.
Yeah.
Emasculation mode.
So,
but I mean, if you are literally unable to have any success in any fight because...
No, but I can. I'm beating them, right? Like, I'm getting through this stuff. It's just... So, another problem...
Are you beating them by somersaulting them repeatedly until they are dead?
Like, I eventually figure it out, right? Like, in some of the harder ones, I'll realize, oh, the reason I keep losing this encounter is because I'm supposed to be standing over there, right? Like, I'm not supposed to have gone to the first cover that I saw because I was looking in the wrong direction, right? So, and it's like...
So are the fights more puzzles than real fights?
No, not really. It's a puzzle to me because I'm so stupid. So okay. You've also got these squad mates.
Yeah.
And in Mass Effect 2, you socketed, I think, a single power on each of your squad mates. And then there was just a button that you would press that would make your squad mate use that power on the enemy that you had focused.
Okay.
And so in Mass Effect 2, I was very regularly able, with an armored opponent, to get the Dr. Alien guy whose name I don't remember. It's like my...
Zoidberg.
Yeah, Dr. Zoidberg. He's like my favorite character in the whole thing, and I just don't remember his name at all. The Solarian scientist guy.
I don't remember his name either.
That's the problem with all these made-up names, right? So I was able to get him reliably to, when I hit a button, set a dude on fire, and it like burns away their armor or something. That was just an attack he had. Now, all of your squad mates have like... 5 abilities.
Okay.
And you can go into like a pause menu where you're supposed to be able to issue them orders.
Yeah.
But you click on one of their abilities and it like changes color. And then you go out of pause and then maybe eventually they'll do it. But a lot of the time they also just do it on their own. So like I'm having a really hard time figuring out what the correspondence is. And this was my problem with Mass Effect 1 also. Trying to figure out what the correspondence was between me telling my squad mates to do something and anything that I saw happening in the world was just sort of bewildered. Like, it is awesome, and I want to keep playing it, and I think I probably will. And I love all of the interstitial bits of it that I think most people don't care about. I love fucking flying the ship around to different places. And I even kind of like scanning the planets to find the things. And I like unlocking
Star Control 2.
Yeah, exactly. Except for fucking skipping the combats, right? Like that's... Right. And like that stuff is neat. And I know that there's not a lot to it. There's not a lot of challenge to it. It's just like, oh, where am I going? But there's like this exploration. And it's there's a bunch of stuff for you to read about all these planets. And there's one thing that bugs me a lot about the PC port is I think that there are certain parts of it that the people responsible for making the PC port just didn't play, because the number of times in doing really basic operations that I have to like move my mouse all the way from one side of my mouse pad to the other and then pick it up and do it again.
Oh, wow.
Constantly. Not in the running around and shooting dudes gameplay, but to scroll around the galaxy map, for instance. And I mean, maybe
you
can also just
scrolling with a mouse.
Well,
not a
mouse
wheel.
You can't see the whole screen of it at a time, right? It's like a 2D thing that you're moving around.
Yeah, but it's not a mouse wheel.
That would zoom, right?
I don't know. I mean,
the mouse wheel would zoom on a PC, and there's no zoom available. Maybe you can move around with the arrow keys or with the WASD also. Mm-hmm. And I just haven't, because I found out that when you're scanning planets, you can rotate them with WASD. But like moving your scan cursor from the top of a planet to the bottom of a planet involves probably picking up the mouse 3 times, that's just bad.
That's crazy.
Like you shouldn't ever make a product that requires you to do that.
Huh.
Like if you have to pick up your mouse more often than once an hour because you accidentally drift to the wrong place, then you are using a poorly designed piece of software. Because I feel like this is a problem that we have just solved, right? How to deal with the mouse. You know, you don't, to scroll all over the map in StarCraft, you don't have to, but the problem is there's no cursor, right? Like, it's designed, it's an Xbox
no
game,
cursor
so there is
all.
No cursor.
Oh, geez.
Ever. There's never, when you're like in a menu or whatever, there's a cursor.
That's confusing.
You know, no, there is. Fuck, there has to be a cursor. on the map, because otherwise how would you be able to like select a place that you were going to?
I don't know. Center it.
The scan reticule becomes a cursor. Yeah, no, I don't know. Anyway, that's aggravating. There are also these dudes that throw these smoke screens, which, as near as I can tell, like, all right, this dude threw a smoke screen, so I just have to sit here behind this cover for like a minute until the smoke screen goes away so that I can...
One of your group mates?
No, one of the bad guys. Like, some of the particular bad guys. I have this issue in these...
Are you sure it's not some sort of vampiric enemy in mist form?
Sometimes I think maybe the reason that my squad mates aren't doing the thing that I want them to do is because they're dead, and I can't tell. Sometimes it'll say, like, hold shift and right-click to revive your teammates, but you run up to your teammates, and the way that you revive them is by hitting the space bar? And holding shift and doing the thing that it says on the screen doesn't do anything. So I don't know what the fuck that's all about.
Maybe there's a healing item or something you need to do that?
I mean, there is. You've got, like, these potions, right? Like, you've got a stockpile. Like, you can hold three in the beginning, and then you find this place where you can, in a hospital, where you can buy an upgrade to your capacity early on. You know, and that kind of shit is awesome. Like, going around and making a three into a four, that's, like, my favorite thing to do in a video game.
Except Wait, for skeletons.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you mean killing your third skeleton, getting a fourth sword?
All of the guys that I've been fighting in the plot so far have been these other humans, and so I just cannot tell the difference between the bad guys and my squad mates. And this is, again, I think a problem, because the primary problem that I had in Team Fortress 2 was I could not tell from looking at a dude whether he was on my team or not.
I mean, does it...
Like,
is
it took me a really long time.
Don't see the red tag over somebody's versus the green tag over somebody else's
I don't
head?
Know. I don't know what it is. I mean, it's probably just because I'm a sluggish-ass old man, and I'm accustomed to playing Mahjong instead of, you know, Counter-Strike. And I just can't think that fast, because video games are a young man's game. It's like poetry. I don't know, man. It's these parts of the game frustrate me, but they frustrate me more because I am really enjoying the parts of it that are not, right, like, actively hostile to my enjoyment of it. And, I, you know, I remember there being some kind of frustrating things about Mass Effect 2. I remember, like, there being fights where I'm just like, ah, fuck. I just have to, like, keep doing this until I can win it or whatever. Yeah. The Mass Effect 2 didn't have any inventory to speak of, and this kind of... It is the worst inventory interface I have ever seen. It's like they were trying to make a game with no inventory, but then they were like, oh, fuck, we need an inventory, but we can't change what any of these screens look like. So
how do you put an inventory in a game that doesn't have an inventory screen?
Well, you make it so, like, when it's showing you what you have on your character, you click it, and then it loads something into another part of the screen that's informational, and then there's, like, left and right arrows.
To swap?
Maybe.
Huh.
Maybe it's to look at them. This was a problem that I had moving around the galaxy map in Mass Effect 1, is that it does not seem... They don't seem to have anybody that can develop an interface that makes it clear whether you're looking at something or using it, right? Like, when I scroll through the guns to look at the guns, in doing that the very first time, I was like, all right, well, I've looked at this gun. I don't want to use this one. And somehow, in getting out of the inventory screen, I had equipped that one. And then I couldn't get back to the inventory screen until, like, an hour later when it unlocked my ship.
Wow.
You find some guns, and when you go to pick, when you pick up a gun, it tosses you into the inventory screen, but you can't get back there on purpose, because that inventory screen is a thing that you can only do when you're on your ship. But they gave you guns before you had your ship. So it's... Wow. Yeah, and it was like, well, fuck. Now I'm just, like... I picked up this gun, realized, nope, this is not the gun for me, and then that's the fucking gun that I had to use for the next hour.
I remember being annoyed by that in Bastion.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I remember when,
yeah,
when
when you
find
get
a
new
weapon in
you,
Bastion,
it switches
you're
to it.
Very rarely near the arsenal or whatever that you needed to swap weapons at.
I mean, and I think they do that because they want the interface to be simplified while you're out in the world.
Well, and I
dicking
think
around,
they might also want you to
they
force
want you
to
yeah,
play
they
with
want
a new
you
weapon.
To experience the new weapons and have the chance to make an informed decision, but still.
Or they want to make a part particularly challenging, and they realize that bringing in your previous weapons would make it trivial or whatever. Yeah, anyway, that's my Mass Effect 3 experience. I'm going to keep playing it. I want to see what this ending is that everybody's so pissed off about.
If they don't change it before you get there.
Oh, yeah, that's weird. Yeah. I had to pay fucking tax when I bought this game online and I had to pay tax.
So does that mean EA has a retail presence in Arizona?
I don't know. I guess there are EA stores.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess that must be a thing.
That's what that's all there, about.
That sucks. There is an EA store in a mall. I am aware of an EA store in Phoenix. So yeah.
That's why.
Huh. Wow, that seems like that is going to be crippling for them as a platform compared to Steam. Like, if every game that you... If there are games that are available on both Origin and Steam, and the Origin one is just always going to be $5 more because of sales tax. Like... Yeah, I don't know. Also, I tried to buy some DLC. I got into the game, and I was like, oh, there's like a $10 DLC thing. I've heard this is cool. Like, it unlocks another squad mate. And I actually already played through it. Like, you get that mission really early. I think it unlocks it as soon as you buy it. And it was a neat mission, too. Like, it was... Playing through that content was a lot of fun, except for the fucking shooting dudes part.
Right.
But in-game, I clicked the thing to go buy the DLC, and it opened Origin's popover interface... And
for like
let me,
pastries?
Yeah. And it let me buy, it let me put it in my shopping cart and go. And then it sent me to PayPal still within the game, on the overlay within the game. But it was in a browser that the window was so small that the proceed button was not on the screen. And it had no scroll bars and it wasn't resizable.
Yeah.
So there was just no way for me to actually buy it because of the limitations of this web browser that they were using inside of Origin. So I had to like... go out and buy it via Origin's website and rerun the game. And so I was like, wow, that was...
Super dissatisfying
experience. Yeah, that was like a really big ad. Like, that just seems like a thing that also you wouldn't allow that to happen. I mean, I guess with that, maybe PayPal made a change that broke it, right? Like, once you're using a web page and you're That's subject true. To somebody else's thing, but still, like, I don't know, maybe, you know, maybe somebody at EA is listening to this podcast.
Sure.
First, close down all the EA stores in Phoenix so that I don't have to pay an extra $5 in tax on your games. Anybody else play anything? Mm. Cool, then. Kevin, what's going on in the world?
Well, speaking of EA, they wanted to help monetize Minecraft. Like, one of the, I don't know if it was the CEO or one of the higher-ups in EA was talking about how they just didn't feel like Notch was really prepared to deal with the realities of like getting people to pay and handle Minecraft and like a good user experience and stuff like that. Cause he's like, you know, to play multiplayer Minecraft, it is a non-trivial operation, right? Cause you either have to like pay somebody to host it or you have to set up your own.
I mean, Minecraft to play single player Minecraft, it's a non-trivial operation because you have to download and install a Java virtual machine.
Well, if your machine doesn't already have one,
which
installed.
Most people don't.
It depends on the computer. It comes pre-installed on a.
I mean, that was Mac OS. You know, when we were talking to Matt Wegner and you know, talking about how it used to be like you can't really develop a serious app in Java because that's just like the kiss of death because people don't have it. But like Minecraft, pretty handily proved that wrong.
Right. So they were like, oh, you know, maybe we can help you, you know, deal with your stuff, and we'll do it for free or whatever. And then Notch responded to that via Twitter. He said, I'm sure EA is very successful at monetizing games, but the more we don't do what they would do, the happier I am.
Yeah. I did not read the article, but I also noticed a headline in my RSS feed today that said that EA had been rated the America's worst company to work for.
Wow.
Yeah.
Out of all of America's companies.
I find that kind of hard to believe. Like, I mean, because there
I'm curious what the pool was of the...
I can't imagine that being an employee of EA is worse than working at one of Amazon's warehouses.
I don't know. People talk about the EA, like, sweatshops, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what that working terrible hours sitting at a computer is still not as bad as working terrible hours doing backbreaking physical labor.
I mean, if that's including the terrible 60-hour a week crunches and...
No, I mean, I think 60 is an understatement there, but I mean, well, I'm not saying that it isn't horrible to work at EA, but I'm saying that's pretty hyperbolic in that there are a lot of people, I mean...
Potentially.
I've heard this pretty shitty to work at Walmart, for instance. Like, I feel like there are a lot of things that are more exploitative than this particular thing that's exploiting college-educated white dudes.
Yeah, who knows?
You know?
Who knows? Yeah. Sega announced that they had lost 7.1 billion yen, which I'm not sure how many dollars that is, but it sounds like a lot. And so they're like restructuring and they canceled a bunch of games and stuff like that.
It's like 90 million.
That's not, that doesn't seem like,
no,
that doesn't seem like a lot.
It's divide by 100 and then add some more.
Are you just trying to convert Fahrenheit to Celsius?
Oh, right. Sorry. That's
all right. So what we need to do is get a cricket.
Yeah.
count how many times the cricket chirps in the amount of time that it takes one pachinko ball to fall from the top of it.
I've got a currency converter, so let's see if I can.
Okay. This is fascinating, by the way.
So I'll read the next one while you're doing that. There's more Wasteland 2 funding to bring Obsidian Entertainment on board. I've forgotten the guy's name, but the guys that did Planescape Torment.
Chris Avalon.
Yeah, are going to join the Wasteland 2 team if they hit, was it 1.2 million? No.
2.1?
2.1 million.
Yeah.
And they're at like 1.9 odd now.
And they got like a couple weeks left too, right?
Yeah. So it looks pretty good. The movement on that Kickstarter has slowed down a lot, but I think they tend to get a burst at the end. Yeah. So.
I am starting to see articles written by people who are like fed up with Kickstarter. Like I'm starting to see a little bit of backlash.
$86 million.
Huh. Wow, you were doing pretty good there.
Yeah, I was close.
I'm starting to see people just like thinking, all right, that's enough. That's enough. Because like it, now it seems like bandwagoning, you know, because it just exploded sort of overnight. But I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. Like, I don't know. It's going to be a really interesting 10 years. I guess the last 10 years have been a really interesting 10 years to just see what happened in the world. Really, every period of time is a pretty interesting that period of time.
Well, no, not necessarily. I think the Dark Ages were
sure, it hasn't always been. I've read some pretty, read some stuff that was like, there are some pretty serious suppositions being put forward that the Dark Ages never happened.
Huh.
What does that mean?
They, what?
That it was just like this story, like it was just, they're just a myth.
So what happened between 200 AD and
I don't know
1400 AD?
I don't know. Ask metafilter.com.
I mean, so
no, I mean this. It was
a period of history that we do not have record of a bunch of important stuff happening.
Sure.
So
they just forgot to write it down.
Okay.
That's the theory. They just forgot to write it down. I don't know anything. I do not know anything about. All I know is that there was a Metafilter post, like maybe a year ago, that was like, there are a bunch of people who are not immediately derided as crackpots who are proposing this idea that there was not some like minor little apocalypse that stopped all rational thought and culture from occurring.
Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah. Look who you're looking at. I know fucking nothing about history. So I'm just saying something that I read on Metafilter. Also, probably that's offensive to gays somehow. That what you said, what I said, everything.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's this thing where the guy so there was one of the guys that worked at OMG Pop who...
So Bzinga bought OMG Pop for $180 million.
This one guy didn't... he left the company. He did not stay
He did not stay on to become a Bzinga employee.
And then he wrote an editorial on Gama Sutra. And while we were in San Francisco, Chris read this. My first exposure to this was Chris reading this editorial and then being pissed off. He was like, yeah, so that story was kind of bullshit. The headline implied that this guy walked away from millions of dollars because he didn't want to work for Bzinga. Like, it very much implied that, because when I read it, that's what I thought that it meant. And I don't know if they changed the headline later or whatever, but it was like, why I walked away from Bzinga's millions was the name of the article, as I recall it. But, like, he didn't. He got the exact same amount of money that he would have gotten, which apparently wasn't all that much because he didn't have a lot of equity in OMG Pop. He got the money from the buyout. He just didn't take the job with Bzinga because he didn't want to give up the rights to a side project that he had, and that his contract with Bzinga was ambiguous as to whether or not he would be able to keep it. So it was like Gama Sutra, like Chris read the thing and he was like, he was like, fuck you, Gama Sutra. Like, you don't deserve the ad revenue that you got from me reading that article because you just fucking tricked me into reading this thing that was not about what the headline said it was.
Interesting.
And it's, you know, it's not like the guy, it's just whatever. Like, it was just a misleading headline, right? Which happens. Like, every media outlet is gonna sensationalize. But, like, it didn't really seem like enough of a story to be a Gama Sutra article. exactly. But now the CEO is like talking about talking shit about him on Twitter, and then,
so that was what that was where the point at which I was aware made aware yeah, of the story is that the head of OMG Pop said that he was like the worst employee, and so they were glad to be rid of him.
Traitor or something.
Lazy people make bad games and good riddance.
And he wasn't a team player.
Unprofessional.
That it was very off the cuff, and I think he later wrote sort of not an apology, but sort of an explanation as to what it was, the context of that.
No, and then he posted that thing about in solidarity for Trayvon Martin, we've added hoodie to the draw something list, tell your friends. And then everybody was like, how dare you? How dare you try to capitalize on this tragedy as part of your social media strategy? And it's like, okay, maybe they were doing that on purpose, but I bet if you hadn't been an asshole yesterday, people wouldn't have jumped down your throat about this thing that was like kind of on the edge today. And also, I bet if you hadn't sold out to Zynga, people would be a lot more favorable about, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I mean, so if they hadn't sold themselves to Zynga, they probably would have been fast followed, and who knows what would have happened. You know, there are a bunch of other games out there that are in this space already and gaining traction because there are other games which are probably more fun than Draw Something. It just managed to somehow get into the right, you know, zone where it was just getting a bunch of users and kind of went viral over the course of a couple weeks.
Yeah.
So there's the one that's the telephone game where...
Yeah. What is that called?
I don't remember the name of the game.
Shit.
I should.
But yeah, it's basically like Broken Picture Telephone, which existed for a really long time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, none of these games are really all that original. They're just like implemented in such a way that they managed to get...
Implementing them in a way that scales and is usable, right? And it's easy to get somebody else to play once you've discovered it.
Yeah.
Drawception.
Is that it?
Drawception is the name of that, I think. Yeah.
So yeah.
What I don't like is when the top ones that are posted are often the reason that they're funny is because of a typo that like turned, like for instance, in the highest rated one, turned Jawa into Jaws.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like somebody reads it wrong or types it wrong, and so it shifts gears really dramatically in a non sequitur way.
A fair way. That's a fair Broken Picture Telephone conceit. If you read the sentence incorrectly.
Is it?
Sure.
I mean, okay. It's that to me is a fair telephone conceit, because the only way that it degrades, the only way that the information degrades is by hearing it wrong or saying it wrong. But in Broken Picture Telephone, the way that the information degrades is by constant translation between two things.
But that is, that's the primary way. But
a mistake, just a typo, makes that less, it's less interesting to me.
I guess telephone would make more sense as a game if you had to change the language each time or something, right? Like that would actually make sense.
It would be more like Broken Picture Telephone.
Like the Babelfish game.
Well, because, I mean, yeah, exactly. Like it just, telephone is a weird game because I have actually played versions of that where the message, you know, when I was in grade school or whatever, where the message survived from one end to the other, and we're like, okay, what was the lesson we're supposed to learn here? What was supposed to be so fun about that?
I mean, you need one asshole kid that just fucks everything up.
Right. Yeah, that was me.
And so if you're just playing with a bunch of people who are articulate and can hear well, it's not a fun game, right? It's like playing apples to apples with people that are very literal-minded and not funny at all. Like, that is just an unpleasant experience. Or maybe it's really fun for them, I guess.
What's the other one? What's the dictionary one?
Balderdash.
Balderdash, yeah. Yeah.
Playing Balderdash with just slips of paper. Play Balderdash. Don't buy the game. Just get a medium-sized dictionary and some scraps of paper, and it's much and more fun.
It's much more fun when people are trying to come up with
fun. Yeah.
Yeah, believable but funny instead of straight believable. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember a game we played of that at a diner, and everyone just started coming up with words that had to do with squirrels or whatever. Like their definitions had to do with squirrels, and so then because you don't randomly pick a word, you sort of just choose one out of the dictionary. I found a word that actually had to do with squirrels, and so the real definition sounded ridiculous. I like games where you can sort of play the system like that.
Yep.
And then Fez was announced to be released April 13th.
Wow, so soon.
I hope it's not disappointing.
Oh, I'm sure it's going to be disappointing. There's no way it can live up to the hype.
It's going
to
be disappointing to me because it'll involve 2 hours of fucking around with my Xbox to get to the point where I can play it.
It'll be disappointing to me if there's not a Mac version.
I mean, I think it's only coming out on Xbox Live to start with, at least.
Well, I can play it on that. That's fine. We have one of those.
Yep. News. So, this assignment, Apollo 18 plus 20.
Yeah.
This is a collection of how many? Of 38 small interactive fiction games, some of which were really, really small, based on tracks from the Microgiants Apollo 18.
18 plus 20 is 38.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think that's kind of the point, right?
But it was also 20 years. I interpreted that as the 20-year anniversary.
It's both.
Numerology, buddy. It can. Is there anything it can't do? No. That's what makes it so dangerous. Number one, Dig My Grave. This one that was the first one that first one that I played, and I was like, these are not going to be very good.
Yeah, it set the bar set after really that. Low, and I was. I think it kind of shook my faith in the whole thing as a project, actually.
It puzzled me because I felt like there is something I had missed, like there is a decision point somewhere that would give you a different ending, but I asked Jenny, and she was like, no, I'm pretty sure that's all there is.
I struggled with some of these things and really wished that there had been any place on the internet that I could find where people were talking about these games.
Yeah.
And I didn't find any at all. It made me really wish that whatever that blog is, the People's Republic of IF, had had a comment section so that I could have looked at people talking about this.
That was badly planned. There's the, Rec Arts Interactive Fiction news groups, but... They're
you guys
probably talking about it there, but...
You guys didn't warn me about this beer, and now my beer is frozen.
Is it really frozen?
There are chunks of ice inside my can of PBR. It's ice cold. It's like a Coors from a refreshing icy mountain stream or something.
Yeah, they just form completely in the streams there.
Yes, that's super weird. Sometimes they swim upstream to
to
spawn.
Mate. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why occasionally one will leap out.
Into the mouth of a bear.
Yeah. Well, really, it will leap onto the neck of a St. Bernard.
Right.
It's like the
second best thing.
Track number two, I Palindrome I. I couldn't really figure out what to... Also, it was some fucked up thing that was played in a web... Like, the thing was written in JavaScript.
I didn't play that one because I was playing in Frotz on the iPad and it wasn't compatible.
I mean, it was super simple.
Was it?
Yeah.
Did you just have to put any palindrome?
No.
Particular ones?
So it was it was a description. I mean, I can just give you a spoiler.
Yeah.
So if you haven't played this and you're going to black out, just drink a bunch and black out for a good 30 seconds and then wake back up. So there's a description of a location.
Hurry!
And then a palindromic, there's a name of a location and then a palindromic description of that location.
Yeah.
Huh. But if you read the name of the location carefully, you'll notice that the second one was always a verb, the second part of the thing. So it was like, what was the first one? fuck something with a canyon, right?
Like, yeah.
Are you going to run it? Oh yeah, Canyon View. What would you think? How would you make that into a
View Canyon?
Yes.
Okay.
And so it's just that one trick pony that's repeated five times.
Aha. Yeah. Gotcha.
No.
Ah, starts you over at the beginning.
Starts you over, yeah.
Lame.
Study lined book.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that's kind of clever.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Very, very minimalist though.
She's Actual Size, track number three. This one was a kind of a puzzle that I wasn't interested in solving.
It was a puzzle that I wasn't aware of because apparently I hit the win condition just randomly and I assumed
which
that
is
it
thing
was
that
just
could
a
happen.
Story puzzle.
Which is
I mean,
the thing
yeah, I mean,
happen.
I guess if you beat
just a story,
if you beat Grow on the first try, you would think, oh, this is just a toy where you click on these things and some awesome shit happens.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, no, this is a really frustrating thing that I never want to play with, even though it's kind of awesome. So you got to do a bunch of...
Well, so I got to the point where you meet her in the lobby, and then it started me over kind of at the beginning, sort of again, and I don't know if it was broken or what the fuck happened.
This is a thing that you brought up when we were at dinner. With a project like this, you don't really know how much faith you can have in the author.
Yeah, and so this was a thing that, especially with this one and I Dig My Grave, and, well, I mean, actually the first three were all kind of... They were all just sort of lo-fi enough that I was like...
And they were gimmicky, right? Like they didn't play like a real IF game.
Yes. And so I was like, okay, so these are
all going to
be...
goofy experimental thing, like one of the text fire things or something. And so you just didn't know, like, is there another ending to this? I don't know.
Yeah, and if I can't find it after 5 minutes, is it worth my time trying to figure it out? Like, there was just no.
I mean, so with something like Port Eleusis, it is certainly worth you spending way more time than that guy told you to spend on it.
Probably, I mean, it's not worth it, probably, but I just got really excited by that. Oh, yeah, that was the other game that I had been playing that I forgot. I continued to play that after last week and like made it further and like found a few more sort of secrets to it, and I'm like, oh god, this is such a cool solid little roguelike.
I need to play it, but I have to install the 96-bit version of Java before it will run properly on
everybody should go back and play Port Eleusis.
You should make a iPad version.
But then track number 4, My Evil Twin.
Very good.
It was like, it was a legit, like, it was simple. It didn't have a lot of rooms, and I got stuck pretty early on, but it was like, this is a text adventure. Like, this is a this
super
is
solid
a map that you can wrap your head around, and you're moving around, and there's puzzles to solve, and there's interesting mechanics.
Yeah, super cool mechanic.
I am a huge fan of the light world, dark world trope in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one was super neat. I really enjoyed the like transformation thing. But I had a couple of really cool aha moments that I was like, "Oh, is that what I just did? Oh, fuck, that's awful." I don't know if you had that same realization.
Or you break the cotton candy machine?
No, when you eat an apple. Did you ever eat an apple?
No.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, right.
When you switch over, do you die because you ate a broken? No.
Well, you just find a bunch of broken glass on the ground, and I'm like, "Wait, oh fuck." It's so great. That one is great. I got stuck. I have no idea what to do. Like I found a keypad in the Nemesis's apartment, and I found some numbers out in the world, but those numbers don't seem to do anything.
Oh, huh.
Yeah.
I didn't find any numbers in the world, I don't think.
It's on the light world tree.
Oh. Okay. You know, I wish that there were walkthroughs of all of these or any place
some of them came with.
Yeah, some of them do. But not
all of them.
I mean, maybe I just need to read rec arts in it, but can you read news groups in, can you, like, is Google Groups still a thing?
I don't know.
Like, I think so, right?
I would imagine it wouldn't have gone away. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Google never sunsets any of their products. Yeah, okay. So that'd be worth checking into.
I just got an email from Google Wave saying that they were going under.
Oh. Yeah.
I mean, that's okay. I still don't know. I don't know what I'll do with it now that it's gone. Number 5, Mammal. It was also pretty classical.
Yeah, that one seemed good. That I didn't end up finishing it because that was the one I was in the middle of when we started taping. Mm. But
I finished it.
I finished it the easy way.
Yeah, there is the easy way to finish it where you can get more than the maximum amount of points. And so it's one thing for Slouching Towards Bedlam, which is one of my favorite IF games of all time, has a very similar thing where you can get, if you know what's going on in the game, you can get the very, like, really the best ending narratively on turn one.
Yeah. Such a good game.
Never occur to you to do that. The way that the secret ending in this one is just something that you would obviously try.
Yeah.
Very early on.
I mean, it says, the first time you try it, it says you can't or
but
you
if
shouldn't.
But if it made you confirm it, you know, is that how it works the first time?
It's what happened to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I accidentally forgot to play The Statue Got Me High.
I played that one. I thought that one was cool.
I started it and I didn't give it.
Yeah, I mean, this is more spoilers as probably a lot of this will be, but I thought it was amusing because it begins setting you up for a very standard, straightforward logic puzzle.
Right.
But then just at the point where where you've gotten all your information that you need and are about to implement that, it takes it away and tears up your cards. It's like, okay, never mind that. This other weird thing has now happened.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's really funny.
It was pretty cool.
Track number 7 was Spider, which I enjoyed. Like, it was pretty easy.
Was it? I got as far as finding what appeared to be the big puzzle and not being in the mood to implement the solution.
Oh. Yeah, it's not that hard.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, I just drew a little picture, and it was...
picture look like a spider?
It was interesting, because you had to use... They make a joke in the beginning about how if you try to go... to in one of the directions from the opening room, it makes this thing about, nah, that's just a bunch of art school clowns that live down there. They don't even know the most elementary things about math and science, like angle of refraction equals angle of incidence or whatever. Like, you know, so they're just like, that turns out was setting you up for this mirror puzzle. But yeah. I mean, it's neat that you had to like point the mirror west, southwest, you know, to get the thing. And then, I don't know, I got all but one point because at the end, it did not occur to me to put the t-shirt on the lathe. Yeah,
whoa. So,
which I same as it would not occur to anyone ever. But yeah, I didn't realize that leaving that room was going to end the game, and so I was like, maybe I will find something later that I need to put
undo at the very
on this
end.
Lathe.
Yeah, that was something I actually really appreciated about several of the games was like the undo command
to undo and then get a different ending easily.
Yeah, they just have. There were some games that. Like, I screwed up, and I got that one in an unwinnable state and had to start over.
Ah, that sucks.
Not from the beginning, because I had saved it when I got into the spider. I was like, this seems like the beginning of a puzzle where I can fuck something up. I liked how the puzzles for defeating the actual spiders were pretty easy. You know, like, just any one of them would work on any other one. Mm-hmm. He might have initially set out to have it to where they only worked on one particular spider or whatever, and then just changed his mind.
Ran out of time or something. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed it. I liked in the beginning how, so I like it when, and this is something that I thought about, like, just about video games in general, and whether stuff could use this tactic. In an IF game, it is really easy to let you explore a world, but build the world around you in real time so that you encounter things at the pace that they intend for you to encounter them at, but you are still feel like you're exploring a world rather than just a sequence of encounters, right?
Because of the ability to look at something and get an additional detail?
No, because you can literally build the world as they're moving around in it, right? Like, Photopia is one of the most effective IF games, like, just as far as, like, emotional content ever. And there are sections of it where you, like, are wandering around and it is trying to give you the sense of wandering around this sort of desert until you stumble upon something. Mm-hmm. And it, as it turns out, it doesn't matter which way you go, right? Except that if you go east and then west and then east and then west and then east and then west, you'll never find it. It just generates new rooms. And then, like, the fifth one that you go into always has the thing that you find in it. But it's still a persistent world, right?
Right.
So it is like a very directed experience that does not... chafe you the way that
that's a weird example though, because it is such an extremely linear game.
Well, sure. I mean, so is this one, right? I mean, you're wandering around in the forest and it doesn't matter which way that you go, but you could do it that way, right? Like, what you could do is you could,
I mean, there are games like that as even the one room games where as you unlocked stuff, other elements came into the room.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, I'm not talking about... What I am talking about is the notion of building... The notion of bridging that gap between a world to explore and a story to experience by building the world in a way...
To fit the story.
That it provides the story at the pace that you've decided, but then the world stays there. So
right.
Further exploration results in nooks and crannies... But it doesn't have to, right? If you go somewhere new.
What? I mean, so you can't do that in a multiplayer setting.
Yeah,
this is definitely a trope that would be limited to single player.
You could do it in an instanced multiplayer setting, right?
Sure, but then repeat play would also be potentially different.
Sure. You know, I mean, a thing for procedural generation, right? So that repeat play was going to be different anyway. I mean, you know, and who knows if they do, like, there's no reason that you have to generate a level. If you're building a level in a roguelike or a game where you're running around hitting stuff with a sword in real time, but the levels are generated procedurally, there's no reason that you have to do it ahead of time, right? Like, you could do it as they're going through it, and you could do a Left 4 Dead kind of thing where you figured out, you know, it's been a long time since we gave him some treasure, as opposed to, like, building this random dungeon that you distribute treasure and traps in. And it's possible to go through this dungeon in a way where you're just like, fuck, this dungeon is nothing but traps.
Left 4 Dead has narrative cues that change based on the AI director, but the map is literally the same each time, though.
Well, that's not true in Left 4 Dead 2.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Because they add walls or something.
Yeah. They have a bunch of choke points that they can fill with stuff depending on how you're doing. Right. Like if you like they tailor the level of challenge by making your path longer.
But that is.
It's different.
That is still a single map that they are sometimes giving you shortcuts through.
Sure. And this would be more. This is a technique that clearly is not applicable to everything.
But no, it's interesting. I'm just curious whether you could actually build something that was literally building the world around you and not
if it was a meaningful 3D world with high fidelity. Like, I mean, I think it would be tricky.
Yeah, right? it's really kind of a neat idea.
I mean, it's hard to think about like how you would do that, right? Because so much of the design, like the visual design in a modern game, is about like, well, you're only going to be able to see the scenery from one direction, right? Like, and so like, you know, which things do we skybox and which things, you know, can you never get close enough to that they don't need high-res textures, right? And stuff like that. And, you know, it'd be a little different because once you've seen something,
you can never unsee it.
Fixed, right? So
unless there's some sort of trope that lets that change.
You know. I mean, like, Binding of Isaac could be generating the levels on the fly if there weren't power-ups
that gave you the
whole
map.
Yeah. You know.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I'm curious as to whether there's any games that really take good advantage of that. The guitar, The Lion Sleeps Tonight, track number 8.
I didn't play it.
I didn't play it.
You didn't play it either. It's okay. It's one room, and then it becomes another room, and then it becomes another room, and there was a sort of a frustrating, puzzly kind of bit, and it's okay. Dinner Bell by Riff's girlfriend Jenny. I was nervous about playing this because it was like, man, I don't want to go on a show where I'm basically going to review this game that was made by somebody that I know, because what if I didn't like it? Then I have to figure out, like, all right, when normal people encounter a social situation like this, are they just like, oh, I didn't play it? You know, or whatever. But as it turns out, it's my favorite fucking game from the entire competition. It's like,
yeah, even if I had not been her boyfriend and had not been a beta tester of it, I think it would be my favorite. It definitely feels like she put the most time and effort and polish into it than the other games.
There's enough going on that it doesn't feel like a cakewalk, but it's not hard.
Yeah, right. And there was never a time that I tried to command
all the way through.
There was never a time that I tried to command that it did not have a funny response to.
Yeah, and
which did not happen in any other game.
She polished it so much. It's difficult to find an object that is referred to in the game that you can't look at.
Right.
And it is one of only two games in this whole thing that has the amusing command at the end. And then it also has a director commentary mode that you can replay it with the commentary turned on. I don't know, man. It was fucking good. It was written in the exact style that we write in and like, you know, so it's going to be, it's very absurdist. Like, I don't know. So much of it is just great that, just the line of text that you get from trying to put something on your head, which is listed in the amusing thing, is just, I think, one of my favorite jokes that I've seen written.
Did you try putting the cake on the stove?
I didn't.
It makes it very happy.
Ah, boy. Yeah, so good. And
the bean is
good
terrific.
Job, Jenny.
Yeah, Jesus, with the bean, man. Yeah. What is wrong with that thing?
Have you seen what that's referring to?
No.
I did not.
So much of this, I'm sure, was referential to stuff, but it was non, like, I didn't get the reference, so it just seemed like absurdist Dadaist.
If you look up Mameshiba on YouTube, it's these weird little Japanese commercials where beans that are also dogs appear and tell people odd trivia facts, which shake the people to their core.
Why is the bagel Dr. Bagel?
Because
Dr. Beagle. Because Dr. Beagle is the other character.
Yeah,
okay.
Yes.
So weird.
Soupbot. Soupbot is, I think, my favorite.
Yeah, it was good. Good.
Did you get both the bad and the good ending there?
I don't think I did.
Because you can try to eat the cake.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did. Okay, so I did. Yeah, I did get both of those.
Okay.
I did get both of those. I like that there's also that fucking report command at
that
the end
was great.
that just gives you different readouts based on like internal variables that it was starting. Like, there's so much more went into it, and it was easy to get to all of it.
Yeah.
It was like a smorgasbord of satisfying content. Like, short form IF, that is the way that it should be.
She put a ton of work into it. The
how long did she spend on that?
I don't know. I mean, off the top of my head, would guess like a couple of months, but I couldn't say.
Like doing it, nothing but that for a couple of
months? Not absolutely nothing like that. She went into crunch mode over the last week or so. Yeah.
Huh.
But if I don't have all my free time starting to be taken up by this new thing that might be happening, then I think she and I are going to work together on making a sequel to this.
Yeah, I would be stoked if that happened or if she just put something in the IF comp that was of a similar level of quality to this. Like, I don't know.
That's
true. The world needs more funny
IF. More funny, puzzly IF and less arty story IF.
And not super hard fucking puzzles that were really obscure. Like, there was some stuff that was a little bit tricky, you know, like...
So,
but there's never anything that just would never occur to you to do.
In this one, both Mammal and Dinner Bell had the same kind of thing where, like...
Yeah, that was surprising, actually.
It was like, collect objects,
Zork,
put them back,
I mean,
put them in this
that's
box.
That's true. That's a good point.
But, like...
That was Zork's mechanic.
So many of them were just like... Open this drawer. Oh, here's one of the things you're supposed to find. And that was...
But that feels good.
It feels good once. Because
there's a joke about each of it, but it's... I didn't feel like it happened enough times that it was... Like...
The thing that I liked about this better than Mammal is that, like, in Mammal, you only had two hands, so you could only ever carry two things at a time, and that was super obnoxious that you couldn't... Like, you had to keep going back and dropping...
And so many of the things involved, like, dropping something, drop something, pick something up, do something, drop that thing, pick up the first thing again, and it was like, oh, come on.
Super annoying.
Man, just don't make people do that.
Yep.
Like, do a first dropping the X, then picking up the X, then, do, you know, do... Yeah, there was never a time in Dinner Bell when the parser said something stupid.
Right.
And there were a lot of times... Oh, man, I've got notes. My notes on the guitar are just grrr. Yeah, what was it? In fucking the guitar, this was... The phone is ringing. Answer the phone. The phone is not ringing. Hmm. And it's because you're not holding your phone. It's like your phone is ringing, but if you examine the phone that's in your inventory, oh, this is Abby's phone. And then... I guess it says something about the other people in the room are also holding phones, so you have to keep asking people for their phone, like, until you get your phone back. Ugh. Like, what? Come on.
Yeah.
That isn't a fucking thing that you... We're in a band, and the gimmick of our band is that we all have each other's fucking phones in our pocket, and it's like, it's cool, come to our show. Narrow Your Eyes was... I
don't think I played that.
It got to this crazy Robo Rally minigame.
Whoa.
At the end of it, that was, it was really weird, and it was just like a weird, had a bunch of sounds. Also, it was like a G-Blorb thing, and it was really just sort of spooky and artsy in the things that were happening to you. And then at the end, it just goes into some sort of weird Robo Rally game with a bunch of tiles of graphics on the right side.
Oh wow!
But no real sense of what.
To do.
You have like three turns before you get killed, and I did not, in dicking around for those three turns, manage to learn what the sort of basic gameplay verbs were that were available to me.
Wow.
In this thing. Like, you can only move one direction, and if you move that direction in the initial game state, you die. And so then I undid that, and then I like just looked around, and in the three turns that I was looking at different things, trying to figure out how to control this thing, a robot moved three spaces and then killed me. And I couldn't undo. I didn't save at the beginning of it, so that was a little frustrating. Hall of Heads, track number 11, seemed neat, but I couldn't figure out how to do anything.
Yeah, it seemed like basically just a creepy little implementation, just straight up of the lyrics of the song.
I mean, how far did you get into it?
I got an ending. I don't know if it was a best ending or not.
Yeah,
you could
that
certainly
was
die.
Super frustrating.
You put the ape
to find...
head. Did you put the ape head on?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then climbed out the skylight.
Oh, left. It wouldn't let me go out.
You have to move one of the plinths and then stand on it.
Oh. Okay.
So many of the things where I got an ending, I was like, "Is this the only
ending?
Is it the best ending?" And not knowing that, like,
you know, what was really neat is in one of the fingertips ones. It had a thing at the top that was the percentage of the text that you had seen in the game. And so it was a game, you know, it was one of those one move ones, which the whole thing is a bunch of different endings, but it told you when you were done.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's really satisfying.
Track number 12, which describes how you're feeling, was fucking great. It was not at all like a... So you're being interviewed by a psychiatrist to see if you can be let out of the mental institution or whatever. And all he ever does is say, would you say that you are feeling, and then a word, and then you have to reply, no, I'm feeling, and then any word that rhymes with that word. And you have 1 minute to do as many of them as you can. And if you get enough, then it lets you out of the mental institution you win. It's just like, it is just a timed game to come up with things that rhyme with the different words that this guy is saying, but that's you have hilarious. To type it every time. Nope, I'm feeling clown was one. Would you say you're feeling down? No, I'm feeling clown. There's the shorthand you can say just feeling clown or whatever, but like
that's hilarious.
Like a neat thing. Number 13, see the constellation.
Didn't play that one.
It seemed like a very linear thing where you have one choice and it was just like a little story about you get on a train and then you decide whether to keep riding the rails or go back to your house. And either one of them seems like the right thing to do once you've done it.
Huh.
If I Wasn't Shy, track number 14. Do you guys, you're like a grocery circle? I couldn't figure out how to do anything and I didn't know if that was the point.
Yeah, I wasn't sure either. I got the one variant ending I found was that you can leave work a minute early.
Yeah.
And that was, I also found that variant
ending, but I didn't figure out how to make time with the hunky nurse.
Yeah, yeah.
Or get the old couple to actually murder each other. Turnaround by Andrew Schultz.
That was the other big logic puzzles one.
Yeah,
I did the
magic square.
Yeah, the magic square and saw the... Like yeah, a chess puzzle or something.
I played with the magic square for a little bit, and then I looked up a magic square on the internet because I was like, I can't. Like, it started giving me hints, and I was like, oh man, this game might teach me how to construct a magic square, but like, no, the hints weren't enough for stupid old me. Yeah, and then I looked up a magic square, did it, saw that there were some chess puzzles, and I was like, nah, fuck this.
Yeah,
and my notes say, nope.
Hypnotist.
Oh, also the If I Wasn't Shy. So in your inventory, you have a pack of cigarettes and a lighter. Mm-hmm. And if you just type smoke on its own, its suggestion for the object of that sentence is the canned goods. And it was like, that isn't something you can smoke. I'm like, yeah, you're right. That's totally what I meant, parser. Like, good work.
I mean, you might smoke the contents of them before they are canned.
Exactly. They're these canned oysters. This would be delicious if we smoked them. Hypnotist of Ladies.
I didn't play that one.
Also seemed like a little bit of a statement. Like, no matter what you did to the ladies, they became hypnotized. Like, there were several places where there were late. You could go across the street to a taco stand, and then if you just examine the ladies 5 times, they are hypnotized by you. Like,
can you count backwards?
I don't know. You don't have a pocket watch. You check your inventory and you don't have a pocket watch. But it was like, huh, okay. Is this like commentary from some lonely guy about how it seems like certain dudes don't have to do anything to get the ladies to like them? And so this is, yeah, you get to play one of those guys. All right. And then all the fingertips start. And some of them are interesting and some of them are not. Now, which of these did you guys...
I didn't get to doing any of them.
I did the
first two. I played
all
the long ones first and didn't get through all of those.
Everything is Catching on Fire, which was pretty good, actually. I thought the writing was pretty good.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that complicated. I liked the final instruction that I had to give to get the good ending.
I forget what it was.
Open floor.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Look under floor. Yeah, look under floorboard is what...
Is that how you
is
did
what,
it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because it's like... and then fingertips, titled fingertips. That one was some weird alien ASCII.
Yeah, this one kind of annoyed me because it was, so you know, you have one turn to do anything. So like, I spent one of my turns looking at my inventory. I was like, oh, okay, I have a thing, and then I died. And then I had to. There were 50 pages in this notebook, and I couldn't find any clue about which pages were important. So I had to look at every individual page. And of course there were only 3 important ones. So that was kind of annoying.
Did the other ones have stuff written on them at least?
No.
Oh, Jesus.
No, it was the same.
You just had to spend 50 get run throughs.
That is a mean
trick. So, I mean, maybe there was a clue in the game as to what, what the, like what pages had important stuff on them, but I couldn't find it if there was. And then it seems like they were trying to, they were setting up a logic puzzle where there was an alien numerical system that was base 6. And one of the pages in the notebook told you how to correspond that to, you know, Arabic numerals. And then one of the pages in the notebook told you the commands for the reactor that was going to blow up. And then one of them told you the same commands in the alien language. Hmm. So with that information, you could construct any word that you wanted, but you could also just copy and paste one of the alien words into the keypad thing and get an ending, which might not have been the best ending, but like that's why I was confused.
Because maybe there is some secret that requires you to actually have all of that information.
Yeah, because it was setting up, because otherwise it's just a super simple puzzle. Just copy and paste the thing that you find in the notebook into the thing and you're done.
Right.
But it seems like maybe there should be some other way to do it. And so I was starting to try to actually do the, I figured out what the actual correspondence was. And the the numerical correspondence for the English letters was ASCII. But in base 6.
Yeah.
And these alien symbols.
So did you try constructing the word eject with an exclamation point?
There, I didn't.
So maybe if you construct the word eject with an exclamation point.
Why the exclamation point?
Because one of the things that you can get is a recording that translator box. If you examine the translator box, you can hear its last recording, which is the hexaregonon or whatever saying eject, 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 eject with an exclamation point.
Okay.
At the end, every time. So we should try that. I wonder if that's what
I want to go back and figure out.
Because otherwise,
because otherwise it just didn't make any sense. And so that's why I was confused as to what.
Because, I mean, if you can put arbitrary text
you can.
Into it.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Do you have to put in like a sequence of commands or how?
You just type in, so it's like, if you do IXV.IV.
Oh, because there's a separator.
There's a separator.
Right. One of the characters is a separator. Okay. Yeah.
You only get to type in one because it's a single command. It's a single.
So it doesn't have to be six letters long. So maybe it's just eject. No. I thought it
had to be six. A lot
of
the commands are 4 letters
long. Yeah, I thought it had to be 6 characters long. So yeah, just try eject. And forget I said that about the exclamation point.
I'll try that one. I'm going to write this down so you can hear me on the podcast.
Okay. So then I hear the wind blow, track number 19. It was pretty interesting,
actually.
You had to do a bunch of stuff to like sort of figure out what was going on, and it was pretty atmospheric and spooky.
So are these one-turn games, is that a common IF trope? Because the only time I had ever seen it was that like billiards game.
I don't know how common it is. It's a known trope. I don't know if a lot of them get made.
These did not tend to have, I feel like when I've seen this before, it's been a complicated sequence of instructions that you had to learn what it was. Like rematch was good.
Extremely complicated.
But it was a really convoluted sentence.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of stuff that happens, a bunch of different stuff that happens, and it like randomizes some stuff every time you play, but in a predictable pattern and stuff.
Then number 20, Hey Now Everybody. That was pretty, like, it was just 4 jokes and then one.
Okay.
It's like somebody has to get them MacGuffin. Although, it does talk about, like, that you're not enough of an adventurer to get the MacGuffin, so like, that's pretty cool. Who's that standing out the window? I beat it on the first try, and so I didn't try anything else. I didn't really give it a go. Yeah. Aren't you the guy who hit me in the eye? No, sorry.
I
found a new friend. Yeah. That one had an amusing list and a bunch of stuff that you could do, and apparently had like 15 different endings, which was fun. Come on and wreck my car. That was the one that gave you the percentage readout of how much text was left, but I didn't care about it. It wasn't.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
But that mechanic was not coupled with something that was worth pursuing.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been, but I just wasn't. There were so many things that resulted in the same text popping out again. Like, opening the glove compartment resulted in a couple paragraphs of text that described what happened.
Okay.
And then referencing anything in the glove compartment gave that same text.
Oh, geez.
And so it was like, normally the way that you you deal with these one move things is that you read in the thing and then you're like, oh, there's an X here, so I should mess with that and see what that says. And then it eventually leads you to whatever it is that you're supposed to do. But this one, there were just...
In the fingertips one, like it, it was like in the Everything is Catching on Fire thing, like the first thing I looked at, which was more obvious, like it obliquely references that in the second thing that I look at, which is like was clued at in the first thing. And I thought, oh, that's nice that they're like they assume that you're going to do a couple of things, and then based on that, you do you know what I mean?
Something that I saw in track 36, which was Fingertips Reprise, one of the things that you can see is a ASCII art of some hands. And I was like, oh man, did they fucking work together on this? And do I have to like look at this pattern of hand? Because they kept describing him as having six fingers and they were poised on the keypad. And I was like,
oh wow.
Oh, do I have to figure out something about what's on this guy's fingertips to figure out what keys he was pushing? Like, I didn't realize it was like a message that I had to type in. I thought it was just a particular sequence that I had to type.
Oh, wow.
Right? And I was like, oh, man, did they hide the... And then I realized, I looked at it and I was like, no, this is just a regular dude's hands.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. But I thought that would have been really cool, actually. Like,
I actually wondered that. When I got to the keypad in my evil twin or whatever, I was like, huh. Like, do I need to go somewhere else? Like, is there some other game that's going to have the answers? Because I mean, a lot of the games had, like... other They Might Be Giants lyrics mm-hmm. referenced just sort of obliquely.
Yeah.
You know, Gary Horrible and stuff. You know, I was
right.
Like,
come on and wreck my... Yeah, we just did that one. Aren't You the Guy That Hit Me in the Eye? It was like a sort of a bar brawl thing where you're trying to avoid getting hit by pointing at somebody else. No, it was that guy.
Did you play these in numerical order?
More or less.
Okay.
Yes.
Because I remember this being the first CD that I ever purchased that... Like, in the liner notes, it was like, this is a CD that is designed to be played on random. And I was like, okay. And so then whenever I listened to it, I always listened to it on random.
I had it on cassette, so I didn't have that option.
Wow.
And apparently European releases of the CD, Fingertips, was all one track.
You had it on a cassette? That, like, destroys the whole point.
Look, I wasn't a rich kid, buddy. I did not have a CD player until, like, my junior or senior year of high school.
Wow. When did this come out? This was around that time.
Apollo 18 was like 92.
Yeah. So it's like the year before.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I had it for, I mean, I...
You had like, it for a year.
It was one of the first CDs that I bought. I think I had a copy of it. I mean, like, I guess I could have gotten Josh to record it for me on Shuffle. Please Pass the Milk, Please was silly. Leave Me Alone. There were a couple of these games that all they were was six different endings depending on which direction you went.
Huh. Okay.
And then sometimes there would be like a northeast and a northwest. And so then that made me want to write a text adventure where there were also directions like up east and up east, up northeast, you know, down south. Down south. That would be a giant pain in the ass to map. You'd have to map it in like Jello or something. You have to,
sculpture.
Yeah, you have a suspension that you like put peas with toothpicks in the suspension.
Yeah.
And then Who's Knocking on the Wall? I was like, nope, because it was just a logic, but like it seemed to be a randomly generated logic puzzle, like one of those where you got to make the grid or whatever. Which was cool. What that did was, because one of the names that it used was Adon, it made me go read a bunch of wiki articles about Planescape Torment.
Which got you excited about that?
Yeah, it got me excited about Planescape Torment.
That's funny because Evil Twin, the tunnel that you go through was called the Vinculum Gate, which is also a location in Killer 7. So I ended up reading the Wikipedia article about Killer 7 for a while.
That's funny.
What else here? All Alone. I don't remember what that one was. And What's That Blue Thing Doing Here? I think was another one of those moving in every direction thing. I don't remember. Something Grabbed a Hold of My Hand. Track 31, I Don't Understand You, was just where no matter what you type, the parser would say, I don't understand. Yeah, which was pretty good.
That's really clever.
That's pretty good. I'm okay with that gimmick. The I Heard a Sound was one move where just turn around. You turn around and found the thing that made the sound, and then it's over. So it's like, all right, that's a very
literal,
very literal and basic interpretation of this. Mysterious Whisper. Fuck, I also don't remember. I think you just listen, and then there's a bunch of different whispers that get whispered to you.
Okay.
The Day That Love Came to Play was pretty cool. You got to get a lot of backstory about this, but you are like a lounge singer who is in league with sort of a Lovecraftian horror, mm-hmm. and the way to end the game is to, like, you in doing stuff, you learn his name and that you're supposed to go out on stage and summon him, so you just summon whatever his name is and he just ends the world. But you can also sing, and that's how you learn some stuff, and you can dance and you learn some stuff, and you find out that there's this woman in the audience that you just had sex with, and it's neat. It was of these, it was the one that was like sort of the most like interesting and flavorful.
Hmm. Which one was that?
The Day That Love Came to Play.
Okay.
So they just took the lounge singer thing, and I'm Having a Heart Attack. Seemed like there was a lot going on in it, but it confused me a little bit, and I didn't really mess with it for very long. Like, you're a guy filming a commercial, and it tries to stop you from quitting, which it was the only one of the games that did that.
Hmm.
You know, it was like, come on. Like, it can't be the case that all of the other games in this thing are better than this one, right? Like, the Fingertips Reprise was just like a, how many fingers am I holding up in this ASCII art? And maybe the puzzle was the thumb was not a finger. I don't remember I Walk Along Darkened Corridors. I played all these in sequence today.
Right.
And Spacesuit, it seemed like it just had a bunch of puzzles that I didn't care about. So, that was exhausting. That was exhausting.
So, People's Republic of Interactive Fiction had a picture of the MIT dome.
Yeah, it's Boston's IF interest group. Okay. So, yeah. Hey, remember when those witty gentlemen turned that dome into R2-D2?
I do remember that.
You remember that?
I do.
Video games hot dog. I said video games hot dog because I tabbed over to Reaper. Where we're recording Video Games Hot Dog. Let's stop recording Video Games Hot Dog because we are we are running long.
Do you want to tell people how they can get a hold of us if they want to?
The point of the show where I always say we're running long, so we'll do listeners' mail next time.
So what's our next assignment?
Oh yeah, fuck. Next assignment is the Molly Jam games. Just whichever.
How do we do that?
How do we find the Molly Jam games?
I forgot to look that up.
Okay. Cool. So that was Riff's job.
I actually forgot to start recording the podcast, so we're even.
I'll tweet it. When we're done.
Okay,
we'll post it, and we can post it in the forums, that'll be great. And I don't know, there are too many of them to play them all, so
it's what would Molly do, DEUX.com.
And Molly is MOLY.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, this is, for those of you who are not familiar with Peter Molyneux is a Twitter account that was created by a guy that was parodying Peter Molyneux by just coming up with these really ridiculous ideas for games.
Yeah, like high concept.
And then they decided to do a game jam where your limit, like the constraints of this game jam, where you had to make one of the games that this Peter Molyneux account had proposed. And then Peter Molyneux himself got excited about it and showed up and apparently made a game. And that was any good.
Try to play Molyneux's game.
If that was the way that story actually went. The Idle Thumbs guys were involved in the San Francisco one, and
One of the Giant Bomb guys was helping run it.
Chris Remo did a bunch of music. It sounded like, from following his Twitter feed, like he did a bunch of music for some of the games. And like,
that's cool.
I don't know. It seemed like a really neat thing. And
was it a 2-day jam?
Yeah, it was a 2-day thing. I totally would have. I would have participated in it.
That was the Giant Bomb.
Except that it was. It was the 31st and the 1st, and we were flying had a ton of work to do. Yeah, so it sucked. Maybe next year we'll, if they do it again. He's already tweeting again. He's just continuing to say those things. So yeah, I think that'll be pretty cool. So Kevin, if somebody wanted to get a hold of us, how would they do so?
Tweet at VGHotDog, email VGHotDog@gmail.com, or visit our website, videogameshotdog.com.
Cool. Thanks for listening to Video Games Hot Dog, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Rock.
Have a great week, everyone.